You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2309 North Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
This is a good starting sentence. Euthanasia in the Netherlands. It's legal to euthanize and relatively common in the Netherlands. People who promote the practice of what some would call mercy killing are wondering about what legal euthanasia is doing to people. One thing they wonder about, and level with me if you can get here, is if it's damaging to give the illusion that there is a technological solution to all of our suffering. Is there a cost to the idea that all of your suffering is technologically preventable? Take a pill, get a shot, and all will be better. And if you don't get better, it's your obligation to take the pill or get a shot or hook yourself to a machine to solve the problem. And maybe you can contribute to this. They wonder if young people who grow up in this technocratic society with this mentality are losing their ability to just live a natural life. Are they losing the ability to put up with any suffering at all? I think technology, like the ones I listed in machines even, are useful and helpful. But they aren't real. They're not natural. Machines do a lot of good, but they can't live. So technological thinking can get a lot of work done, but it can't live. It isn't alive. Sounds obvious, but it isn't. Maybe we're even treading in Circle of Hope on thin ice because we are technologically connected. Some of you have spoken to me about this before. And the pastors wondered this week about it. This is the question that we tried to answer. It's so interesting. We have a video where we talk for 5 minutes, and on that video, we wondered if face to screen was a good way to build communities. Very ironic and meta and strange. And it took us like a half an hour just to get the dang thing set up. You know, and we're not exactly, you know, neo-Luddites, especially yours truly. I'm the pastor they call when they have a technical problem. I'm supposed to fix their computer problem, you know, like my parents calling me to figure out how to do something on the computer. That's like the other pastors. That's how they talk to me like that, which is fine, whatever. I'm the youngest one, and so I guess I grew up this way or something. Maybe I'm dooming us. Maybe we're doomed. Sometimes it seems to be a requirement in order to be around here at all to have some computer literacy. Like you need to be able to check your email because we email a lot of things, right? All of you say, we get a lot of Circle of Hope email, right? Even though it's like 20 messages a day, which isn't that much. You know what I mean? Some of you are like, yeah, it's not. Yeah, I might send you 20 a day, right? That's it. Sandy's looking at me like, yeah, you email me. By the way, this is the year I found out that group texting is more effective than email. I don't understand why it is or how it could be, but it is. Is that true? Do any of you not check your email? You have accounts that just go neglected. They have 10,000 emails. Does anyone not check their text messages? It's hard to admit that because you know you're ghosting some people even in the room. You know they've texted you and you have not written back yet. You're waiting. So a little hard to admit. I know. I understand. Although I actually don't understand because I respond like within seconds. Anyway, someone could text me during this sermon, probably get back to them. Anyway, maybe we're doomed. You can't sow a computer, as in a seed, and expect it to give birth to more computers, right? It's like that scene in Zoolander. You know this? Where the files are in the computer. And these idiots think literally in the case of the computer are the files. They think it's alive, it contains things. No, that's not how it works. You know, I've gone to the point where I think that if I download a song and it's on my local hard drive, I have a physical copy of it. That's what I say. This is physical music that I have, even though it's just data on a hard drive, because it isn't in the cloud, right? That's the distinction I'm making there. It's not on vinyl, which is actually physical music in it. Even a CD isn't physical music, right? The vinyl has an etch right into it. I think my MP3, which I still listen to MP3s because I'm old, like how old I am. I remember Napster. I still think that's physical music. I just moved to Spotify this year's huge, huge change, and I'm still suspicious of it. I still don't trust it, you know. Sometimes you have to wonder about these things. You can't water a computer and feed it and expect it to grow. It has no power that causes life to happen all by itself. Sometimes you have to wonder if we really want to teach people how to adapt themselves to a computer. What are we doing to our lives? So this whole series about biotic math, or as Bell and I call it, apostolic arithmetic. That was pretty good. Apostolic, the apostles, never mind, it's too much. Rod White gave a similar series in 2000 that I'm adapting from him. Here's a line that he said in 2000, and here's 2000 Rod White's face. They might soon be wearing one, as in a computer, and responding to its every beep and vibration, enslaved to technology like the rest of us. Very interesting, ominous prophecy. Because 17 years ago, by the way, the towers were still up 17 years ago, and you didn't have a smartphone. Almost no one did. They didn't even exist. The iPhone is just getting its 10th anniversary this year. So you got to think, in 2000, little ominous, and yeah, that's how he looked, too. Rod White. I was very happy when I found that picture, by the way. So much of what Jesus is demonstrating in his life and teaching in his words is about keeping us safe from being subject to anything that purports to be life but isn't. This is a major theme in Christianity. We're body people. Jesus came in the flesh to relate to us. And even when the Greeks tried to disembody our faith and make it about soul and not about body, like your body is getting resurrected to go to heaven, John wrote a whole gospel about it and then a bunch of other books to try to change the whole idea. No, your soul and your body are connected. A robot can pretend to be alive, but it isn't. Ever go to a wax museum and see Matt Damon or something like that? Not real Matt Damon, wax Matt Damon. A plastic flower resembles a fragrant rose, but it can't grow. Some of us are so disconnected from that, you might accidentally water your plastic plant, which I've done. So that's the kind of person I am. Jesus keeps calling us to real life, even though we repeatedly are duped into fake. In the scripture for tonight, Jesus does that by demonstrating the most basic biotic formula there is, multiplication. Something alive can multiply. It reproduces itself. That's the definition of a species, an organism that can reproduce itself. Ever watch a Napoleon Dynamite? Doesn't he have a liger in there? This merger of a lion sleeps with a tiger, and then a liger comes out? Something like that, or is it a tion? There's two different... It depends on who gave birth, right? And the poor liger loses the hormone that keeps it from growing, and so it just grows itself to death. So it's a mutant, and it can't reproduce. TMI. Tiny detail, living things that are actually alive and real reproduce themselves. I want to talk about this subject as naturally as possible, and I think the story that happened in the life of Jesus on those two particular days says a lot of it. This story has a life in itself, and if you listen to it, I think you'll understand how multiplication works. Jesus is feeding 5,000 men and their families with just a few loaves and fishes, and it shows you how life happens and how it multiplies. I'm going to take you through this account in a slow kind of way. His miracles have attracted a lot of people to the hillside outside of the town. It's a golden opportunity to show a lot of people the life of God. He has an idea about how he can do that. And before he begins, look at how Philip gets drawn into the process. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" Philip answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. More than half a year. Philip's this technocratic person. You know, reliable, typical people that really help us figure out our stuff. You need a technocrat on your team. They lose if they run for president, but you need one. They're boring, right? little annoying. Philip might be a good math guy. He actually has this estimate. This is how long it'll take for everybody to have just one bite of bread. Can't buy them lunch, Jesus. We don't have the stuff. We don't have enough stuff to do this. It is technocratic thinking. We look at ourselves, look at the circumstances, and estimate the same thing. It's a scarcity mentality. Can't do it. My resources are too limited. We call that pragmatic and realistic. And we actually need some of that because, as you know, the Earth has a limited amount of resources. And so some technocratic thinking with how we use resources would help us. Like, you know how this room feels? That's what's happening to the world as we keep consuming things. That's not exactly what's happening in this local economy, but there's a space for that kind of basic math. But Jesus draws Philip into a new way of seeing how life works. Another one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves, 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? I never noticed they were small fish. I don't know how small, maybe they're like the sardine size. I think Andrew's reaction is typical of people, right? And typical of us again. Here's the evidence, Jesus. Philip said we don't have enough money for these people, and now all we have is a boy's lunch. Technocratic thinking again. We need evidence. Evidence-based policy. Empiricism. Even if our spirits and feelings tell us differently, we're trained to go with what we see, to go with what can be proven in the court of empiricism. Philip says, theoretically, we don't have the ability to do this. Andrew says, evidently, Jesus, here's the proof we don't have the resources. On this day, followers of Jesus couldn't multiply because they weren't using the right math. They were stuck thinking about themselves as the source of life and thinking that what they could see is the only thing there is, so Jesus shows them how life really works. Jesus has people sit down. Have the people sit down. I think it's on this page. Yeah, right here. Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted, and he did the same with the fish. This is the process of transformation at its finest. Jesus multiplies the bread and fish and demonstrates the basic biotic formula for multiplication. Regular everyday things and everyday people placed in the hands of Jesus are given new life and can reproduce. Isn't that true about us? We're like bread made of something that's growing, that's got the life processed out of it. Some of us have clear and gone to a white bread. We're mostly air. In the hands of Jesus, something animates us. Life is at work in us. And God brings us to reproduce. Bread making is a good spiritual discipline in general, in my opinion, because it really does bring this lifeless powder, the wheat that's milled into flour, and makes it something new. You form a gluten network that's elastic. And when you introduce yeast into that dough, it puffs up. It blows up the balloon that you've created. It never works without some transformation. In the hands of Jesus, something animates us. Life's at work, and God brings us to reproduce. When they've had all enough to eat, he said to the disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. The life overflowed the limitations. This overflowing of what multiplies in the life-giving hand of God is how we see ourselves growing. It's how we see the church naturally growing too. This is our sense of how we want to extend the kingdom of God through multiplication, like a living organism reproduces itself. Life grows in us. It outgrows others. It generates cells. The cells overflow. This is a natural way of living. The cells form congregations. The congregations overflow and they make more, and on it goes. You might be paying attention to some of the stories that are floating around about how we got to 5 congregations in Circle of Hope. It's a biotic process. In the course of seeing that multiplication, in the chapter later on, he says, in a verse later on, he says, "Gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted." I think biotic math that Jesus is practicing is giving us new life and helping us reproduce. That's multiplication. But I think it's significant that he demonstrates it with bread and fish. His church is filled with everyday people. Many of us are the pieces that were gathered to make up a new church. We're not wasted. We're touched and made alive again. The technocratic thinking leads to a lot of waste. Here, we've overcome those material limits and also not wasted. In the life of abundance, nothing is wasted, as opposed to in the life of excess. One of the things that pleases me greatly is that among us, people that are addicted, people with mental illness, people that are hurting, even people without faith find a safe place. Not everyone does, of course, and there are terrible things that happen to people among us. But just this week, someone told me that they met someone on the street one time. Guy was strung out, and they told him, "You'd find God among us." He was skeptical, and he thought that a person would like him could never fit into a church, because he had to be good to be in a church, and he was not good. People like that come among us and find safety, a little life. Sharp edges of skepticism and the pain are blunted. No one's wasted. Even the stalest piece of bread gets new life, gets whole, gets distributed, gets filled with something else, someone else, gets to fill someone else with life. Used to multiply the life of Jesus in the world. The account goes on, but I think you should ponder all that it means that Jesus escaped the people because he wanted to drag them into what they thought was normal and make him a king, and he goes off to be alone. Does a great miracle, they want him to be king, he runs off. He's so filled with the Spirit that he ends up walking on the Sea of Galilee to catch up with his followers who are rowing against the storm. A lot of meaning there, but I just want to end with looking at how these poor people are trying to figure out multiplication with Jesus. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into their boats, went to Capernaum in search of Jesus, and they found him on the other side of the lake, and they said, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" Jesus answered, "I tell you the truth, if you're looking for me, not because you saw miraculous signs, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. You're looking for me because I did a miracle. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him, God the Father placed the seal of approval." Even after the people had a chance to sleep on it, back to the same old thing. They don't just get that the life is in Jesus and they can have it in themselves. They're so stuck on the idea of their limited resources that the best they can do is go look for more resources. Get more loaves, get full, then get more. Sometimes church is like that. The Sunday meeting somewhere could be like a little miracle that happens and you keep going back to get your fill instead of participating in a bigger life. Keep wanting to get more. Keep getting filled. Isn't that the whole American dream? These people following Jesus around couldn't get it out of their head that Jesus was so rich because he gave us all this bread and fish. They had trouble seeing beyond themselves. Then they asked him, "What must we do to do the works God requires?" By the way, if I meet Jesus and I ask him, I'm not going to ask him this question because he's going to point out the vacancy in my life that I have so much struggle to fill. Reminds me of when he told the rich young ruler to get rid of all of his possessions, sell them, give them to the poor. Here he says, it's the same old thing, just show me the facts, give me the evidence, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. I don't want to have to live. I just want to perform the rules so that I can get this right. You might have an imperious boss who doesn't encourage you to live, and all of a sudden you're asking him or her, "What am I supposed to do?" And you're just trying to make sure you're not getting in trouble. Isn't that the worst thing? I just don't want to get criticized at the end of this, because that is mortifying. Anyone feel like that? Job well done if I didn't get criticized today by my boss? Yes? Yeah, it's not really living, is it? Jesus, what must I do? Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent." And then in this old John phrase, he says, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry. She who believes in me will never be thirsty." How does transformation really take place? How has it taken place? It's not an act of will alone. It is not something done out of our own resources alone. Assessing the evidence wisely, like we're the center of the universe. Believing is mostly about being ourselves before God, who presents himself to us and in Jesus. We're working this out in tandem with the Lord. And there's a reason why the Bible kind of contains both ideas, that it's your responsibility and it's God's sovereignty that saves you, because it's not so clear. Jesus, who multiplies the bread, works in us and we come to life and we live, but we have to show up, of course. There is something of a choice, conform to the formulas of logic, supposed scientific law, the rules of technology, or live your life according to Jesus, put yourself in Jesus' hands. What Jesus calls us to do is align with him. Throw your lot in with me. Believing it is not essentially acquiring something that we don't have, or accepting a concept we just learned, or agreeing with the evidence that we just saw. Believing is not essentially about acquiring something that we don't have, accepting a concept that we just learned, or agreeing with evidence that we just saw. He says, if you want new life, transformation begins with me. Watch what I do with bread and fish. You might get the idea. It's not about bread and fish. So where did Philip and Andrew end up after this? Were they wooed away from their sense that they are at the center of things? That they needed more evidence to see the way that Jesus did it? Or did they open up to their longing for the bread of life? Life that doesn't just come from us, that isn't justified by us, but just is. Life in which we live and move and have our being. So eat the bread and fish. Retreat with Jesus to the mountain. Walk with him on the water. Be the everyday people who are the church, where life happens and extends to new hearts and places as it grows and reproduces.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.